Want to just do a backup? Do you mind?
Sure.
Okay. Hey, guys. Well, I didn't think I'd have to get quiet in Rav Rosenzweig's here. Okay. Just very, very two very quick points before I begin. Number one, I printed out a couple of the outlines for people, but if anybody wants, again, it's not, they're like, whatever, they're not collated exactly.
How many pages are there?
There's five like sets of them. It should be three or four pages. I also sent it to everybody's email. The outline is not exactly an outline, like a typical outline, but it does, at least I think, it does cover in seven pages, six plus pages, both sugyas in their entirety. So because I did that, obviously it's going to be a little bit longer than maybe like a classic outline. So it doesn't look like one, but it should be very helpful. And if at any point you decide you don't want to follow in this year or you got lost because I'm not as clear, you can feel free to look on the outline. Number two is just maybe the more important piece. The Chazar Shirs I've typically been to have really been, that I've heard of, are really one of two types. The classic one that is probably, that people mostly do, is they try to distill the Shitos in a clear way for people in the Shir, even if it doesn't necessarily cover everything that Rav Rosenzweig was doing and trying to do during the Shir. And there's a lot of really good reasons for that. On some level, even though we all agree the Shir can't just be distilled and relegated to just Shitos, at the same time, like tafasta, mua tafasta, it's an important thing to do, and there's really good reason to do that. There's also another, thing that other people have done, which is basically, by using the themes of the shir, have used it as a springboard to talk about other things and give their own shir. That I don't hear as much, but it definitely is done. I'm going to try to do a little bit differently, and I apologize if my being ambitious ends up compromising on some of like the important things that Chazar Shir is supposed to be about. But hopefully, if we do this, it will be a little bit in the style that hopefully in doing Chazar of these Shiurim, future Shiurim on different topics should be easier to understand, from Rav Rosenzweig, like the way he presents Shir. And of course, I'm not being presumptuous enough to think I can do that, but just from being in the Shir many years, just to give a little bit of a taste of what exactly Rav Rosenzweig, what he tries to do. Okay, with that in mind, we're going to start with Temura and then go back to Nashim. Because of regular shir now, we're going to be picking back up with the chulin topic. So I'd rather us leave ourselves with that than the tumura one. Okay. So, one second. Tumura. Should have done this before, I apologize. Which pasuk is it? What am I? Taz, you got? Right, okay, good. Fine. So Temura comes up very early in our Masechta, which is why we got to it in the beginning of Chulin, as we all know. And it coming up at the beginning is actually a very big anomaly. It's in the end of Vayikra, Mamish, the very, very, very end of Vayikra, at least the second time. And maybe best expressed in Meiser, which is naturally occurring Hegdesh. It reflects the Koach HaHegdesh. The Netziv actually makes a comment, which makes it sound like Meiser, in terms of its theme, helps best express what is so problematic about Temura. And being that it's in Meiser, something which I already said is like this naturally occurring Hegdesh, Yavor Tachas HaShevet, which really specifically ignores physical features, but reflects the values and attitude you take to material wealth and worldly possessions. So it really talks about the Kodesh potential. It can be any of them, any of the 10 that pass the Tachas HaShevet. And even when the 10th is ultimately the one that becomes Kodesh as Meiser, the remaining ones that passed aren't stripped of the potential they initially had to have been Kodesh. Any single one of the 10 that past Tachas HaShevet could have been, and even when it isn't, possibly still retains a little bit of the afterglow of what could have been. Every single thing in your possession, even after Meiser is done, could have been Kodesh, and maybe should still be looked at that way. You can't really make your korban yourself from a balmum, but the whole point, again, of Meiser is that anything which passes through automatically denies and doesn't care at all about physical flaws or defects, but just becomes kodesh, just becomes hekdesh. Anyway, so it's in the end. Tamur is in the very end of Sefer Vayikra, so it probably, as Rav Rosenzweig was talking a lot about, reflects Kedushas HaKorban as well, just like the beginning. The pasuk at the very beginning of Vayikra says, Vayikra al Moshe vayidaber Hashem elav me'ol mo'e le'mor. And if you read the pasuk very carefully, something interesting comes up. Taber el b'nei Yisrael, speak to b'nei Yisrael v'yamart eliyam, and say to them, Adam ki yakriv mikem korban la'Hashem. A person, ki yakriv, when he is yakriv mikem, not mishalachem, not from yours, but from you, korban la'Hashem, when you, a person decides he wants to bring, Adam ki yakriv, when a person, when he decides to bring a korban, it's going to be a korban la'Hashem. Oh, and by the way, the definition, the character, where the korban has to come from, it's going to take effect on a behema. Min ha-behema, min ha-bakar, min ha-tzon, takriv is korban la'Hashem. That's how it starts over here. And it very clearly, as the Meforshim, the Ramban and others, really what's happening here is the Adam is being makriv. A person desires, has interest, to give himself over to the Ribono Shel Olam, but he's told to take a step back. Don't bring yourself, but min ha-behema, min ha-bakar. An Adam ki yakriv, when he's going to be makriv. Naturally, a person is spiritually oriented in a way that he's going to want to bring a korban, he's going to want to sacrifice himself, and that should take place, by the way, on a behema. But the behema almost becomes secondary. The physical thing on which it takes place becomes secondary to the desire and interest to give a korban. Compare that for a moment with the very end, with the psukim, by Temura. By Temura, the opposite happens. The focus is not on the desire to give a korban, that, by the way, has to be on a behema, but v'im behema, asher yakrivu mimena korban la'Hashem, v'im behema, and if there's a guy who's a little bit of apprehension, hesitancy, does he really want to bring the korban? V'im behema, and the emphasis on behema, im behema asher yakrivu mimenu korban la'Hashem, if you're going to bring a behema as a korban la'Hashem, so it emphasizes again, after speaking the entire Sefer Vayikra about Kedushas HaKorban, kol asher yitein mimenu la'Hashem yiyah kodesh. It establishes again and tells us the dinim of kachim, that if you have a behema that you're magdish, so it's kodesh. It's a superfluous pasuk. Again, I think as Rav Rosenzweig pointed out, maybe he didn't, I think he did. And this is also an opportunity for some of the Meforshim, again, at the end of Vayikra, where we've already had so many dinim, to talk about dinim that reflect the absolute capacity of Kedusha to Bichal. Rashi already comments that Kol Asher Yitein Mimenu means that even if you try to Bichal a partial Kedusha, even on an Aver, on any limb of the animal, Kol Asher Yitein Mimenu Yiyah Kodesh. And the Siv Seichem points out that in general, like by Erechin, not by Kedushas Haguf, by Kedushas Korban, by Erechin, it has to be an Aver Shanishama Tuluyabo. It has to be a significant Aver, not just any Aver. But over here, when it comes to Kedushas HaKorban, any Aver whatsoever, the ability of Kedusha to be Chal is extremely magnified. And it's over here where the Rashbam makes the comment, Kol Arshayi Tenu Meimenu LaShem Yiyakodesh, that's Stama Lishma. Again, Stama Lishma, as we spoke about in other Shirin, has the also, just reflects so much the ability of a korban, the nitan le'omed liyos kodesh. So establishing the power of kedusha at the very end by Temura, again, maybe tells us how fundamental, how much Temura itself as an institution reflects kedusha. But as I pointed out already, there's a little more hesitancy. The person is a little bit connected too much, the im behema to his behema and to possibly bringing it. And then we know the rest of the psukim, lo yachlifenu velo yamir, the double lav, tov bira or ra betov, which one is which, v'im hamer yamir, behema bivehema, and then again, just the confusion of like, what's really, what is it? Like, which animal is really kodesh? What is kedusha? V'hayu utmaraso yiya kodesh. And that's how it ends, and we'll probably get back to that. And the Rambam decided, of course, he didn't need to put it at the end of Sefer Karbanos, the laws of Temura, even though, again, he could have put it in Avoda, where it talks about certain dinim of pidyon. But more than that, he puts it after Hilchos Shgagos and Mechusrei Kapara, Kippurim, which actually comes later in Shas. Those dinim are in Krisos, and Krisos comes after Temura and Shas. But the Rambam decided he was going to end off with Temura, and again, the very, very last halacha of Temura about the importance of Karbanos. Okay. So that really just reflects, get down what it is that we're going to say. But there are no secrets here. This is a Chazar Ashir. But it reflects an overall casual and too materially focused, too commoditized attitude towards Hegdish. When what it really is, what Korban really should be, is man withdrawing from and sacrificing his physicality on the altar of spirituality, on the altar of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So he gives of himself and not his things. So we could imagine, and we all saw this, we could imagine that we're going to distinguish between someone who is an insider, who has a strong connection to this Korban, this Kedushas HaGuf, and someone who's more of an outsider. For example, if the Korban is Shutvin, or it's a carbon sibor. So we could imagine that it's possible that because it doesn't belong to you, you are not the exclusive owner of the carbon of the Kedusha, that your decision to try to undermine the Kedusha's HaKorban may not be as effective as someone who's an insider, because it isn't this affront as much to what Kedusha's HaChavtza is really all about. And so that brings up, of course, we say, Ein Tmura, so Tmura, there's no Chalos to the new Korban. But at the same time, there may not be Malkus also, or there may be Malkus, but either way, it isn't going to be the regular din of Temur. And similarly, and also the Gemara discusses it by Isha, if anybody continues reading the Gemara on Daf Beis, where Isha may be, again, a little bit disconnected from Kedushas HaKorban, in the sense that Smicha, which is probably in Avoda or an institution, that not only establishes, or maybe not only establishes who the Baal is, but creates a very deep connection between the makriv and the korban. And so besides just being able to identify for who the korban is, whose record it's going to go on, it itself is part of the person understanding, and for the korban beginning its process on the connection between the person and the korban. Yeah.
What do you mean that a korban ashutfin is not considered insider? What is
it? Meaning a person who decides he is going to utilize temura on a korban sibor, which is not his, isn't necessarily affecting in a egregious way, probably in a merida way, what this kedusha stands for, because he can't. It isn't his. A korban sibor, for sure, we're all familiar with the notion that none of them are really actually baalim at all. And even in a korban shutvin, where he is a partial baal, still he can't really disrupt the kedusha of that korban. Only when he can does Temura maybe become the biggest problem it could be. That doesn't mean he's not going to be Chayav Malkus.
If the problem is his skewed Deos, doesn't he still have skewed Deos?
No, that's maybe why there'd be Malkus. But in terms of a level of effect of being the full Temura package, so it's again, you could imagine that it's lacking in terms of the ability to be a, you know, the same way we spoke a lot of things, with Shchut Dechutz. And then also with Isha, who may not have Smicha, there's an argument to be made that, and that's how the Gemara talks about it, arguing that, again, her relationship to the Kedusha Sechef, to the Korban, may be a little bit less strong, and there could have been a Havamina, which is ultimately the Maskana rejected, there could have been a Havamina that she doesn't have the same Din Temura as an Ish. And then just one other point about Mezid, again, it's a very similar thing. Not the Chilik of insider versus outsider, but how much are we Machshev Merida? So on the one hand, you could imagine, Mezid is the worst thing in the world. You're attempting to violate the sanctity of this korban, or to create a new kedushas hakorban in an illegal way, and you're attempting to do that. How terrible is that? And for sure, mezid is going to be worse than shogeg. But as we already saw, the different deos and the Baal HaTosfos, Yon Chulin, it could be that mezid on some level is actually not that it's not worse, but it isn't going to be as effective as shogeg. It's possible, and you could say one of two things here. I think on the one hand, you can say that Gufa, because you're trying so hard to do it, the Torah, in its resilience, to establish that Kedusha can't be changed, is going to tell you, when you try to do something b'mezid, we're not going to let that work. We're not going to let you be effective in your attempt, in your plot, to corrupt Kedusha's HaKorban. But b'shogeg, it will work. Or we're not going to give in. We're not going to give in b'mezid. And so there's not going to be, even if there's going to be Malkus, as Tosfos, as Rabbeinu Tam suggests, there's not going to be, there's not going to be a chalos Kedushas HaKorban. Again, something we'll revisit very soon. On the other hand, it's also possible that what's worse is when you do it b'shogeg, like in Me'ila, it's worse that you are confusing the two things versus when you try to do something b'mezid. That wasn't as clear as it would be, but again, it's not so important. Okay, fine. So with all that in mind, I hope it's been clear so far what we're trying to do. With all that in mind, let's zero in a little bit exactly on what's being done, on what the Isser or Isurim really are. So there are two Isurim in the Pasuk. We have Lo Yachlifenu Velo Yamir. And the question is, how do you deal with two formulations of a lav? So we have Shoresh Tes, where the Ramban and the Rambam have a machlokes, and they seem to agree when it comes to Minyan HaMitzvos. If you have a single prohibition, even though there are two lavim, they are going to only have one minyan. But they disagree when it comes to the Malkus. The Rambam says that you are only going to have one Malkus, if it's Be'inyan Echad. And the Ramban says that that's not true at all. You're going to have two sets of Malkus. And the Griz on Temura actually suggested that maybe the two Deos and Tosvos on whether there are 40 Malkus or 80 Malkus is exactly this Machlokes between the Rambam and the Ramban. Between the Rambam and the Ramban? Whether or not you get two sets of Malkus when you have two Lavim about a single prohibition. It says you can't do Temura, and we know there are two Lavim. So the question is, even though you're only violating one thing, one Temura, one Din Temura, do you get two Malkus in response or because of the two Lavim? So the Ramban says yes, and the Rambam seems to say no. That's right. So the Griz thinks that, as I said, Lo Yachli Fenev Lo Yamir fits in exactly to this Machlokes Ramban and Rambam. But it's possible that in light of all this, there are different ways to look at two lavim. A little bit now, notwithstanding the Machlokes Ramban and Rambam, there are different ways to look at two lavim. Right. Okay. But of course, it will have a little bit to do with the Ramban and Rambam, but okay, let's take a step back. So there are three options that we spoke about in Shir several times. One of them is simple. You have two lavim that, yes, they may like teeter around the same institution. They may be talking generally about the same thing, but never the twain shall meet. They're two separate lavim legamre, and they deal with different circumstances. It's just one prohibition. There's one problem, but the problem needs to be addressed by in the different circumstances that may arise. So Tosvos points to the Gemara in Daf Tes, which we're going to see inside soon, that lo yachlifenu refers to b'shal achirim, and lo yami refers to b'shal atzmo. That when a person has his own korban, and then he has another korban, another animal, behemas chulin, so he can't create on his chulin a status of kedusha by using the nusach of temura, and that's a prohibition of velo yamir. Additionally, when someone else has when Reuven has an animal which is kodesh, so Shimon can't come along on his own behemas chulin and use in a nusach and say, I want my animal to have the kedusha's korban of Reuven. And so those are two different situations, bishal atzmo, bishal achirim. In one case, you violate lo yachlifenu, and the other velo yamir, and that's also why, how you explain v'sovag asar abayim, they're only going to be 40 malchus. But that's one option of how you can look at two lavim, either as two totally separate things, two different circumstances. The other option is to look at them as talking about the same thing, but one is megala milsa on the other in terms of the cases in which it applies or how far we go with it. So it's not so much that when I do a temura on my own behemas chulin, that I only violate lo yamir, and when it's bishal atzma, I violate lo yachlifenu. But there are like certain things that need to be teased out. But at the end of the day, you really violate both lavim anytime you do something which ultimately is decided constitutes temura. Again, we're going to flesh this out more. And then there's a third option, and that maybe is the first day in Tosvos, who says that you actually do get 80 malchus. So why did? Because it's two lavim that are talking about the same thing, the same circumstance. So why is it that the Mishnah says v'sovei gezar arba'im? Because it's not trying to tell you that you only get 40 malchus, but it's establishing there are malchus. And how many malchus can you look later? We just needed to prove, despite being a lav she'en bo ma'isa, chutz mi me'mar nishvu mekalo, that still in Temura there are malchus, but it's not 40, 40 is lav dafka, and it's really 80. There's also a third way of looking at two lavim, which is to say that really they're not just talking about the same thing, and it's not just merely a gilui milsa in terms of revealing the circumstances in which you'll violate Temura, but actually there are two different dimensions that could have existed and been mutually exclusive, one without the other, and they are ultimately brought together they're ultimately brought together in reflect. Sorry, and as they reflect two dimensions, they ultimately are both violated. These two different things that are both problems are violated, and they both come out from any single violation of Temura. Anytime you violate Temura, there are these two mechayvim, two dimensions to what's so problematic with Temura, and it's those both which you violate that the Torah needed to like identify especially to tell you that there are two mechayvim. It's these two that you violate every single time you undertake a Temura. Okay. Everything good so far? Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
I thought that the option that one was in the gala and the other was that there's one lav and that the le'achim qualifies the bisser of lo yomir, which would be the
day of... Yeah, not qualifies, it modifies. It can't qualify it. Meaning it expands it. Even to Bishal Achim or Bishal Atah.
You only get 40 now.
Right.
Oh, so...
No. You don't... Oh, no, you get 80. It's two lavin. If it's going to expand on it...
I thought
an internal expansion. No, it doesn't expand on the cases. Or it's the first day of Tosos is Bishal Atah and Bishal Achim. They're just two separate things. The Torah had to tell you both because like you would have thought that only Bishal Atah and you wouldn't have known that Bishal Achim or vice versa. But they're just two separate things, so it's only 40. It's only going to be 40 whenever you do it. The other option is that it you may need two lavim, but the lavim are practically the same. You're not really doing anything different when you do lo yamir and lo aplifenu. But if it didn't teach both, so you wouldn't know maybe all the rules. But at the end of the day, they both come together just to be 80. Did anybody else understand like Eitan? Everyone else did. No, Daf Tes, I said that. The Dan Tos, which is 40 Malkus, is Daf Tes. That's what I said. That's what I mean. The second option, where it's 80, you guys, so why do you have two Lavim? If it's in the second one. No, right. So that's the second day of Tos and Chulin, that's the only day of Tos and Chulin, and the second day in Temur. Exactly. But the second option is that it's all, every time you violate it, you're violating two Lavim. So why do you have two? Because you need to be megalomos on some of the details. But it's not to say that they're totally different things. Yeah.
Well, I think the way that we talked about Mishir was that the case where you get 80 molecules is like the Bali-Rao-Bali-Muffin model where you have two concurrent but not necessarily identical chayim. But the megalomos one is all still one lab. It's simply expanding or qualifying.
I thought the whole... Okay, so maybe I'm wrong. I could be wrong. We're going to go on after this, though. I thought the whole point is saying in the 2 days in Tosvos, one is like Daftes, which is the day of 40, and then the other day in Tosvos, which is 80, is like the Mar Daftalid, where it is two Lavim. It's two... But again, you still have to explain why there are two Lavim. So on some level, there... Again, whether to fill in the differences or Lav or Lav Vishay Lavim, so that's why you have two lavim, but not because they're two different cases, but because they both are needed for the one, always one case of Temura.
Okay,
No. There's a third model, which is where Rose is like, Banat Bayer of Alimate. The third model, and I, as I was saying, is that, again, it's also always one thing, but the two lavim actually do express like fundamentally different ideas, two different ideas that could have been seen as separate, but are brought together in the end of the day. Yeah, what's up?
I think that when we started talking about the models, that was only when we were trying to present the view that Tosos, the two days aren't arguing, so we're trying to talk about when they are arguing, we're not talking about different type of models. I'm not sure.
Okay, fine. Either way, those are the three models. The second one, I guess, is open for debate. Either way, I guess I'm not making my case so well if people disagree. So either way, like the second one is definitely open for discussion. I thought that's what Rosenzweig said. Okay, so those are the three options. So, and then the follow-up question needs to be when analyzing these three models, so unless they're two separate ones, then the question is, you know, in the balance of things, which one do you choose to emphasize? So we know the Rambam, even though he says you violate both, in your credit in Shemayim, he continuously emphasizes Velo Yamir. It's the only one he counts. If you look at Unculus, actually, it's like very interesting. Every time the word Velo Yamir comes up in the Psukim, besides the first time, so like by the Psukim in Maaser, so it only mentions V'lo Yamir, and he quotes V'lo Yechalfine. He quotes the translation he gives for Lo Yachlifenu for Lo Yamir, and he does that. He really continues to do that throughout. So it's possible he emphasized Lo Yachlifenu. Rashi is actually very fascinating. Yeah, we could talk about it. Rashi is actually very fascinating because it seems like, I think what Rosenzweig's point was that Rashi thought V'lo Yamir. Also, he keeps every Sofek HaSarbaim, he says V'lo Yamir. But actually, if you look at Chulin, so when it says Losha Adam Rashai Lahamir, Elim Meimir Sofek HaSarbaim, on Losha Adam Rashai, he only quotes V'lo Yachlifenu. And when it gets to Sofek HaSarbaim, so he quotes V'lo Yamir. In Temura, the two times on Losha Adam Rashai and on Sofek HaSarbaim, he just says V'lo Yamir. That's the only one he quotes in Temura. And so the question is, like, why does Rashi ever quote the Mefarshim in the back in Chulin? I think it's the it's maybe like the Gilyon Maharsha asks, like, why it is that Rashi first does Lo Yachlifenu and then V'lo Yamir. So maybe a way to explain these theories in Rashi is based on what Rashi says on the Avdalad Amabez. On the Avdalad Amabez, when the Gemara says that if something is a lav shanita glase. So is it, the Gemara really says, anything that's a lav anita glase, is it really true that you don't get malchus for? But what about temura? So over there, Rashi quotes that temura is a lav anita glase. The lav is lo yachlifenu, and the ase is v'im hamer yamirenu, whatever, you should bring it as a korban. They're, again, clearly emphasizing, when Rashi, in that stage of the Gemara, when emphasizing the one lav and the one ase, where the Gemara doesn't get onto trei lavim yet, Rashi just says v'lo yachlifenu. Then, when the Gemara says, ah, but it's different. Where, if it was just lav anita glase, it'd be true. Of course you wouldn't get malchus. But what's special about temura is that it's two lavin and one ase. And therefore, lo asi, chad ase, ve'akar shtei lavin. Lave. So over there Rashi says in temura, on the two, when it says trei lave, he says the following. Lo yachli fenu, ihachi, lave vyase, lo yachli fenu, velo yamir, veahachi, soveges arbaim. What Rashi may be saying is that initially it would have been velo yachli fenu, but if it was just velo yachli fenu, it would have been a lav anita glase. I think that someone suggested maybe in Shir. It would have been lav anita glase and no malchus. Comes the assay and is doche, the original lav of velo yachli fenu, and what's left is v'lo yamir v'ahachi sofeg es arbaim. You only get malchus, you only get 40 for v'lo yamir. Which is why every time the Gemara says sofeg es arbaim, Rashi says v'lo yamir. Not because he didn't think the ikar lav was v'lo yachli fenu, he did. But because of what happened in Temura, Davdalad Amabez, the two lavim and chadaseh, the chadaseh was akar, the original default, lo yachli fenu, and all that remained was v'lo yamir. Which explains why maybe conceptually Rashi thinks v'lo yachli fenu is a default problem. But Lamaisa, at the end of the day, you only get Malkus for V'lo Yamir. So Rashi's a little bit in the middle of, again, whether you want to explain it my way or not, Rashi's a little bit in the middle, you have to contend with that, of the Rambam and Unkelis. Again, but we're still within our two models, right? And I was just saying that if you're going to say that it's not two separate Lavim entirely, then you have to ask the question, which one is the default? And so that's that. We're not going to go back to it. Okay, so those are the options. Those are the three options. But how exactly do those options of how to look at two lavim come from the Gemaras? It's great that we have the Rishonim, the two Deas and Tosvos, and the Rambam, who we're going to suggest is the third way of looking at two lavim, as Elimelech was saying earlier. But where do those come from the Gemara? So there's two Gemaras. One Gemara in Daf Tesa Mebez, in Temura, says the following, Lo Yach, Tanu Rabban, Lo Yachlifenu B'shal Acherim, V'lo Yamir Aso B'shal Atzmo. So Tosfos basically derived from here, in their answer in Chulin and their second answer in Temura, that we're talking about two different lavim, two different cases, never shall the twains meet. I'm even saying it my own way. Good, fine. But we didn't read in Shir the rest of the Gemara. Gemara says, V'lichto V'lo Yachlifenu V'lo Bayi V'lo Yamir. It should just write lo yachlifenu, and then velo bayi velo yamir. And you know, if you just write lo yachlifenu, that in either of these cases, you'd violate temura b'shal atzmo b'shal achir. For some reason. And then the Gemara says the following: Ikasav hachi. If it just wrote velo yachlifenu, hava amina. That what's the problem? Teitzezo v'tikanezo hu detilki. When you try to exchange it, remove the sanctity of the initial korban and put it on a different korban, that's a problem. Because you're trying to take away Kedusha. Aval Meimer, Ditarvayu Kamagdishlu, but when you're just trying to use a language of substitution, a different methodology of Hegdish, of Magdish, Ema Lo Lucky, maybe you think that there's no problem because you aren't trying to downgrade Kedusha, but you're just trying to, yes, in a unconventional way, in a non-standard way, all you're trying to do is create new Kedusha, even if it's in an inappropriate way. So you would have had a Havin if you're not trying to downgrade Kedusha and only use a bad means, that there's no problem. Kamashlan it is. And so really what comes out, what eventually we're going to say, we're going to get back to this, about the Lo Yachlifen Evel Yamir, already a little bit comes out from the Gemara. Not only is swapping a problem, but using an incorrect methodology to be Magdish is also, and that's why you need two Lavim. Either way, Daftesim at Aleph is a good case, makes a good case for having two separate Lavim. 1 second. Oh, you're stretching. Makes a good case to have two Lavim. Okay, we're good still. Makes a good case to have two Lavim. There's another Gemara, and so that would fit very well with Tosvos in Chulin and the second day in Temur, their second day in Temur, where just 40 Malkus and different circumstances. Then there's Gemara in Avdalat and Mabez.
But isn't there a different drasha though, that we talked about before, about the difference between Lo Yamir? They're separate, but there's a difference between Lo Yamir and Lo Yachlifenu. No? Meaning, there's what will you learn out from them? Meaning, separate but different in the way you learn it, what you learn out from them.
What do you mean?
Tosos, you said before, the Lo Yamir, Lo Yachlifenu, that's me or someone else. And here, aren't you saying it's not about that, it's about your mindset when transferring?
No, so I was just adding, I should have been clear. Tosos is just saying, B'shalatzmo, B'shalachayrim. It's two different circumstances, two lavim. Okay, that concludes the discussion of Tosvos in Chulin, and also Tosvos the second day in Temura. That's it. I was just adding, once we were reading the Gemara, that if you read the Gemara, Lo Yachlifenu Ve'Lo Yamir, it kind of teases out these two perspectives we're going to get to. And I'm going to get back to it. But that's not what Tosvos is saying. Tosvos is saying it's two different circumstances, two cases. And again, I'm saying he didn't continue reading the rest of the Gemara, maybe. Okay? Fine. He is able to read the rest of the Gemara, but we're just not going to quit right now. Davdalad Amad Beis, again, because it's still his Chazar Shir. Davdalad Amad Beis is a different Gemara. The Gemara says that maybe we have a general rule, maybe the rule of kol lav anita glase in lokan alav isn't really true. That even when it is a lav anita glase, you do get malchus because of Temura. And Temura is a lav anita glase, or so it seems. Yet, we know that there are malchus in Temura. The Gemara says, no, don't bring a raya from Temura. Lava nita glase in lokin alav. But it's because there's this special thing of chadase ve'akar, lo asi, chadase ve'akar tre lave. Since Temura is tre lave ve'chadase, it's an exception to the rule. And even though it is a lava nita glase, still they're going to be malchus. So here it sounds like, again, the more you think that they're totally two separate things, you can't necessarily make a good case why there should be this exception of a charase v'trei lave. If you think it's like Tosvos in Chulin or the second Deya in Temura, it's a little bit hard to make the argument why there really is it's like an exception of trei lave and charase, because they're two separate things. They're talking about two separate cases. So why can't the assay just attack each one of them independently and totally be fine? The more you think that kind of the lavim work in tandem, however which way you say it, so then it's very possible, then it's easy to explain this Gemara. That there really are two lavim, maybe there's Shmone Malkus, and that would explain the day in Tosvos, that there are, even though it says Sovagas Arbaim, they're really in truth, it's 80. I'm not going to go so much into this on Davdalim and Beis, despite my interest too. And I'm not going to talk so much about the Lava Niti Glase part and whether or not it really is true that the rule of Achad Asay, Utrei Lave, Lokin, even though it's Lava Nitak. And I'm also going to skip Rav Chaim, even though I think it's very, very, very important. But I'll explain it at the end, which I'll leave time for, if people still want. But it is worth reading. All that stuff is like very, very, very important. But we do need to know one thing from the Rav and Rav Chaim, though, from that whole discussion between the Rav and Rav Chaim. The Rav holds very stark that the Rambam, who we're about to read, holds of the Gemara and Temura, Daf Daled Amud Beis, of Trei Lave V'Chad Aseh. But Rav Chaim, and this was really Rav Rosenzweig's preference, and I put this in the, at the very beginning of the Temura stuff, doesn't need to embrace the Gemara and Daf Dalet and Mabez as wholeheartedly as he does in the Rav's version. The Rav really actually explains the problem that's going on in Pesachim by basically saying that the Rambam holds that when there's two Lavim in Chadaseh, in Vayra and in Temura, that you're always going to get Malkus. Because the Rambam holds of Daf Dalet and Mabez. Again, I'm being vague, I'm not going into it, so it's a little bit vague, but again, you heard the share, but I'll also explain at the end. But when it comes to Rav Chaim, he doesn't need, and it's very possible that the Rambam, even though the Rambam does quote this answer as to why there are Malkus by Tabura of Chara Seyu Beis Lavin, he doesn't need to be so enthusiastic about it. Because it's not what's going to, he doesn't need it to explain the problem in Pesachim. Okay, Hamiv, okay. I fear saying Hamiv and Yavin in a Chazar Shir, because like the point really is to explain. But whatever. Again, Tafai, in different ways, Tafasta, Mua Tafasta, Tafasta Meruva Tafasta, Lo Tafasta. Okay. Okay. However, what is important in terms of the Chadasei, Upeiz Lavim, that there's an exception to the rule of Lavanita Glase when it comes to two Temura and two Lavim, it is important how we look at Temura in general in terms of the Beis Lavim, like what is the nature of these Beis Lavim, but also the nature of this din, of this special Lavanita Glase of Im Hamer Yamir, Vahayahu Temura So Yiyah Kodesh. What exactly is this Asay? And Rav Rosenzweig pointed out that it isn't exactly like a classic Lav Hanita Glase. The classic Lav Hanita Glase, I forgot who it was that did such a good job of pointing it out, is Veheshev Zagzela, where what's really happening is a tikkun of the Lav, and can fix, and really almost turn back the clocks, go back in time to uproot the Avera that you did, either as like a response to it, or that you never really violated the Lav, but there was always a Chisaron in the Maisa, in the violation of the Lav, in the Maisa Gzela. And this certainly explains why there might be no Malkus in classic Lav Anita Glase in Gzela. Because there really is no Lav. Either it never happened, or it did, but it's so perfectly, you know, like symbiotic, like neutralized, that there's not even going to be Malkus. Okay. But when it comes to Temura, it doesn't really work that way. In Temura, you can't fix the Lav or Lavim, but the Asay of Ahayahu Temura So Kodesh, that nevertheless, the original animal and the new one are going to be Korbanos, it does demand of you this reformed behavior, the corrected behavior, and imposes itself on you in a way that's consistent with violating the two Lavim. The problem with violating the two Lavim, as we said, was precisely the fact that you, let's say, just had this like flawed perspective of Kedushas HaGuf, of what Korbanos really are. So it's not that after you've violated it. Once you violate it, you've done it, it's a problem. You can't go back on that. You can't undo what you did. But what you could do and what the Torah could demand upon you in the wake of those two Lavim is it could tell you, you know, you tried to undermine Kedusha, not only are we going to make you persist in it, but actually it's going to go further. It's going to double. It's going to be extra when you try to make it less or different. So it isn't a classic Lav Hanita Glase, but it's valuable in the same way that Lav Hanita Glase is generally valuable. When it comes to Gzela, telling you to return it can almost perfectly correct the motivation that drove you to act incorrectly. Give it back. You took it, give it back. You'll mostly cover your bases. Mostly. Maybe you need Ritzoy and all these other things, but giving it back is probably good enough. Or mostly good enough. When it comes to Temur, you can't fix that, but at the same time, the assay does work in the same way. Because it does, like I say, impose upon you and insists that you treat this thing with the Kedusha that it always should have been treated with. And so in that sense, it really is a Lav Hanita Glase, even if it doesn't quite work like the other. So the assay, Ubeis Lavin, is important, even just in terms of understanding what's going on in Temura, noting A, that it's not a classic Lav Hanita Glase, but nevertheless the Gemara decides to call it that, possibly for this reason. And many people point out that it's not a regular Lav Hanita Glase. Okay. Whatever, not yet. Okay. And maybe the fact that it's even Beis Lavin already indicates that it's working differently, but fine. Okay. So back to the Gemara. So we have two different Gemaras, two different sugyas. Again, this is how I started. We had the three different options of how to look at Beis Lavin, Daf Tes, and Daf Dalid. And now we're really going back. We're going back to those Gemaras and asking how exactly can those Gemaras really represent two different views. So it could be that there really is a machlokas asugyos, and that's exactly maybe how we look at the two days in Tosos, a machlokas asugyos, or not. Maybe it's not really a machlokas asugyos. And the best argument to make why it's not a machlokas asugyos is exactly which shita?
Rambam.
Because the Rambam does quote both, even though it does have significant subtleties and nuances in how he quotes them, which are going to be important. Right? His nuances are going to be the solution to navigating the stira. By changing, if you take the Gemara at face value, it's a stira. If you make subtle changes, you can actually make them not a stira. And so we're going to have to zero in on those subtleties to try to explain why there's no stira and what exactly the problem is. So maybe we need to look at Beis Lavin a little bit differently if we want to resolve the two Gemaras. And in this, and here, Rav Rosenzweig used Bal Yirah, Bal Yamaseh for several things. One of the things he used it for was trying to make a point about a unique way that Beis Lavin can work. Bal Yirah u Bal Yamaseh you always violate both whenever you violate one, but the Rambam puts them in Reish Aleph. Reish and Reish Aleph, he puts them as separate los asays, and also in the Koteret. And then again, he just mentions the Shtei Lavim, he also counts them separately in the Koteret. So there are two different minyanim, which is just interesting because it's also against the Rambam himself in Shoresh Tes. The Rambam himself in Shoresh Tes said, when you have two Lavim for one institution, it's always going to be counted as one minyan. And even though the Ramban said, it's one minyan, but you're going to get two malchus, the Rambam said, not only is it one minyan, but it's only one malchus. Yet the Rambam, by Bal Yirah Bal Yamaseh, at point there, Rav Rosenzweig, it's two minyanim. Not only is there a question of two malchus, he counted as two different minyanim. So how could that be? What exactly is going on in the Rambam? And he pointed out, maybe we'll get this, he pointed out, if you look very closely in Shoresh Tes, the answer really is there. It's kasav betzido if you are medayik properly, but we're gonna flesh that out. The kesev mishnah actually says the kesev mishnah on halacha gimel perak av halacha gimel when the Rambam talks about the two lavim and violating them, he says that you only violate both when you violate both lavim, of course, when practically you're in violation of both of the lavim. When what is unique about Lo Yirah and about Lo Yimatzeh are violated, so then you violate both. But that is in most cases. So the Rambam just says, Lav or Lav b'shnei Lavim. Hameiniach hametz b'shuso. He violates Shnei Lavim. But that's because there's usually no Nafkamina. But if there is a Nafkamina, which can explain, also let me say this first. If there is a Nafkamina, for example, if it's Tamun b'beis, so you don't see it, and you'll only violate Bal Yimatzeh, but you won't violate Bal Yirah. So with the Rambam's point, he understands everything practically. It's all just a question of that in most cases you violate both, but there's going to be enough meaning between them because after all, and this is Rev Rosen's comment, not the Kesef Mishnah's, after all, they're counted separately. So if they're counted separately, how could it be that you always violate them together? That's not two lavim, that's one lavim. But as Rev Rosenzweig said, as he pointed out, the Rambam never says this. Never says that there is going to be a nafkamina, and if anything, says the very opposite. He says in a few places that in Reish, I think he says ve'ein elu shnei lavim b'shnei inyanim aval him b'inyan echad. They're not two inyanim; they're mamish b'inyan echad. And it just sounds like you always violate one. And if anything, he just seems to really say that you always violate both, and he doesn't ever mention the exception that the Kesef Mishnah points to. But the Kesef Mishnah maybe had a good, hargasha of trying to explain why it is that there are two, if at the end of the day, it's always one. Indeed, if you're medayik very carefully, in Sefer HaMitzvos, the Rambam tells you something very important about Lo Yirah Lo Yimatzeh. In the beginning of Mitzvah Lo Sadei Reish, he says, Sheziranu, Shelo Yirah Chametz Bechol Gvuleinu. You shouldn't see Chametz Bechol Gvuleinu Kol HaShiva Yamim. He mentions the word Gvuleinu, which is again, it's the Pasuk. And gulenu implies that it's not seeing. It's seeing no matter where you are, even if you're outside of your domain, even if it has no kesher to your bailus, to your rishus, lo yira is a violation of gulenu. You can't see it anywhere, no matter where you are. In Mitzvah Reish Av, when he talks about lo yimatze, he says he shehiziranu mehi matze chametz from finding chametz birshusenu. It's a din in rishus. It's a din in ownership. Even if you don't see it. So even though in the Koteret he just says, Lo Yira and Lo Yimatze Kol Shiva, again, he's already preserving the Lashon HaPasuk when he's quoting them in Sefer HaMitzvos, one Adinin ownership and one Adinin Re'iyah, which we'll speak about, which we're going to explain right now. But at the same time, he also was saying right here, Ain they're Inyan Echad. They're always one Indian. There's never a case where you don't violate both. So what exactly is pshat? Two lavim. How do you explain the pshat that there are two lavim? So it's possible that lo yimatze, as we already were implying, is a din in bailus, in regular ownership, like titular ownership. And lo yirae is more of an actual physical relationship with the chametz. That doesn't necessarily need to have anything to do with legal or acquisitional ownership whatsoever. And it could have been that you've seen these two things are totally different things. They're mutually exclusive. You know, one is all about having a kind of like, you know, familiarity and intimacy, knowing you have it, knowing what it's about, knowing how you use it, a certain familiarity with the chametz, a desire and interest. And the other one is just a cold, you know, cold and very business as usual relationship with the object. And it's just a question of ownership, of kinyan. And what the Rambam's telling you is that when it comes to chametz, so there are these two dimensions that could have existed separately, but in chametz, all bets are off. In chametz, we don't look at ownership the way we look at it everywhere else. Shtei dvarim, asa hakasav, shtei dvarim that are not bershuska, asa hakasav kilu bershuska, one is bor, which we obviously love very much, and the other one is chametz bepesach. Chametz, because of what it is on Pesach, because of all that implies, any connection with it constitutes really a violation of both of these dimensions. Whenever you see it, so for sure there's a problem in terms of seeing it and the intimacy and the desire that you know is deeply you know comes within you when you see chametz. But at the same time. And again, because of what Chametz did on Pesach. And at the same time, though, don't think that this doesn't also create this strong legal bond in terms of the effect of the legal bond, that is implied by a lo yimatze. Again, they could have been seen separately, and they both are extremely strong in the way they manifest themselves. But the point is that on Pesach, with Chametz, with all that it is, both of them really always exist. If you ever get near it in a general, like, you know, baila sense, in a general, you know, relationship sense with the chametz. And so even though it's counted as two, to reflect these very important two different dimensions, you'll always violate both, again, because of what chametz is, because of how, you know, toxic it is, a word of Rosenberg likes to use with the chametz, the noxious presence of chametz, because of how much we need you to get rid of it. Ke'afar, you know, it's the worst thing in the world. Because of what it is on Pesach, it just needs to be totally neutralized. And any connection to it gets you all these different things. So even though Temura works differently, and there's only Velo Yamir, and he doesn't count it separately, it's all under Lo Yamir, so it's not really Beis Lavin, but still, the Rambam does quote the reason of Beis Lavin, and he's hesitant about it, which is important. He quotes the reason of Beis Lavin in Temura, in Hilchos Temura, but really it's Beis Lavin, but still, sorry, one second. Yeah, so really it's Beis Lavin. Okay, good. We're good on timing. Still Beis Lavin, but and there's no, he doesn't separately quote the pasuk of Lo Yachlifenu. But at the end of the day, it could be that they do merge in the end. When it comes, it could be that Lo Yachlifenu. As going back to the Gemara now, Jonathan, the Gemara that said, Lo Yachlifani, you would have thought it's an exchange. Kamashlan Lo Yamir, that even when you're trying to affect Kedushas HaKorban in an abnormal way, in a not such a pure way, so that's also going to be a violation of Temura. So Lo Yachlifani, The idea is you can't exchange and swap, which reflects the attempt to deconsecrate kachim, be illegally podet, which itself is a lack of kavod umore kachim. But there's also another dimension to it of lo yamir, that you shouldn't create a substitute, meaning a not idyllic kedushas hakorban, by bypassing the standard lishma, the pure and volitional maisa hakdasha. As we said, hakdasha is gufa, all about no ulterior motives and no strings attached. It's not about the chefsa shel behema, the material, you know, the thing that you're being ma'at. It's about the interest, the motive to give of yourself, despite material connections, earthly connections, to give all of that to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And so it shouldn't be about trying to, you know, recreate, you know, a kedusha of the initial korban, but it totally is about a pure ma'isa hakdasha. And you could have said that lo yachli fenu, creating a substitute, isn't a problem at all when you're making it better than it was before. Physically better, physically more superior. And if that's the case, so then why should you even have a problem? Lo yachli fenu. Lo yamir tells you, nope, you created it in a bad derech, a wrong methodology. You avoided the pure motives that usually come along with it. That's just about you and hakdasha. Not about copying, not about anything. And so that's a problem of lo yamir. And the same thing is really obvious of lo yamir. I'm not trying to deconsecrate the korban. Not at all. I'm totally fine with it. So of lo yamir. The reverse, what's the reverse? I'm blanking out. That's lo yamir without lo yachli fenu. I'm blanking. But if velo yamir, how do you violate lo yachli fenu without velo yamir? What? Right. Oh yeah. Thank you. But you could have said that there couldn't be a case where you never violate exactly. Thank you, Eitan. Velo yachli fenu, because adiraba, you're not trying to deconsecrate the kedusha. No. That's the opposite. I just made a mistake. You just violate v'lo yachli fenu. No, it doesn't explain it. Hey, tzarchin, I need to explain that. That's important. Just why, how each one works without the other. But either way, these two factors exist. I had a trouble with this even when I was cutting out, but it does work. But again, there are these two dimensions, and the Torah is trying to tell you maybe that it's not about... Whatever, we'll talk. I just want to get to the Nashim stuff. The Torah is telling you that that really both come from a place which is undermining the purity of Kachim, of what it really is supposed to be about. And even though, yes, there are these two different things that could have been mutually exclusive, we have to explain the other side of it, obviously. Nevertheless, Kamashalan, both of these things are happening every single time. Both of these are happening every single time you undertake a tamura. And that's how you can explain. And the Rambam, he quotes both Gemaras. Because it isn't so much that there are two different... When the Rambam in Halacha Gimel says, lo yamir b'shal, like when he says that a karban b'shalachem and a karban b'shalatzmo, it doesn't need to come... Both of those circumstances don't need to come. One from lo yachlifenu, one from v'lo yamir. They both come from tamura. At the end of the day, lo yachli velo yamir combine to tell you this broader perspective of Temura. And that broader perspective will naturally tell you, yes, b'shal atzmo, there's a problem, but also b'shal achayev, there's a problem. You don't need each pasuk to address that, but you know from the aggregate, from understanding what Temura is in general, what is that both b'shal achayev and b'shal atzmo are going to be a problem. And so he can still say the Beis Lavim thing in Halacha Aleph. Okay, that is Temura. You can do this in 15 minutes. It's just one page. Okay. Nashim Shochlos. So we have to contend with two things. Svara and evidence. By Mitzvah Zaseh Shezman Grama, or Eidus, Eidus, you know, where we say Nashim are Psulas, and Mitzvah Zaseh Shezman Grama, where Nashim are not Chayavos. So you could have, Eidus, which may have been a din in the Maimad HaGavra, there's something fundamentally necessary, qualifying, you need to qualify as an aide. And it's possible that Isha, who she is, what she is, what her role is, may not have that. But if not, if there is no real reason to exclude certain people, Without those reasons, there you wouldn't think to exclude anybody if not for some technical reason. So by Shita, for example, if there isn't some need in the Maimed Hagavra, there isn't something specific necessarily required in Shita, unless for some technical reason you're not going to posel people who are typically kosher. There's nothing wrong with an Isha. You know, she has full Kedushas Yisrael, but based on her role and what she is, she'll be excluded from certain things. Like I said, Mrs. Mangrama may be Edus. But in Shita, unless there's a compelling reason to say that we'd exclude her as a Gavra, it doesn't seem very likely that she shouldn't be able to do it. Like I said, unless for some extraneous technical reason. That's the Svar. The evidence is the fact that in Kachim, the Mishnah Zvachim, Laman Alva Beis, says very clearly that women can be Shoflos, and even Lechadchila. There is actually a Gra in Siman Aleph who quotes Tosos in Kiddushin that for whatever reason, we actually said Lechadchila, women shouldn't even Shech Kachim. That's how he explains why women shouldn't do Shechidas Chulin. But typically, the evidence does show that Nashim can be Shoflos in Kachim, Lechadchila. So the Svar in the evidence. So I wanted to, let's see if I can do this. So the Shita Mekubetzes, which Rav Ozak actually ended off with before beginning to discuss, Nashim Shochtos, as we all know, asked the question why Chulin comes where it does, after Zvachim. Menachos after Zvachim. So one of the answers it gives is to tell you, the Shita Mekubetzes says, and I want to structure the 2 days around this. One of them he says is that the reason it comes after Shechidas Kachim is because it's Ashchidas Kachim Kamahader. Chulin is coming in the aftermath of Kachim because it wants to return to something in Kachim and how it relates to Chulin. Over there it says in Kachim, Kol Hapsulim Sheshach L'Shechidasan K'sheira, the Hapsulim that Shecht and Kachim are Kasher. So you have a Havamina that maybe, it's not true in Shechidas Chulin, that maybe Psulim are not Kasher when it comes to Chulin. So Kamash Milan, that they are, and not only that, but all of the psulim, even tame, can be shovdos lechachila in chulin. So the havamina is that you may have thought chulin is not doesn't allow for psulim to sheft. The kasha is no, not of course they could, and not only that, but there's more of a reason to allow psulim to sheft in chulin than in kachin. The maskana, of course, is like Tosvos on chulin daf beis. That if Kal v'chomer from Kachim to Chulin, if they could show b'shogdos l'chachil in Kachim, of course in Chulin. But the Havamina, and that's also the view of Rov Rishonim, but the Havamina itself is obviously very intriguing. Our Mishnah says Hakol, and Hakol shochdin, u'shchidasin k'sheira, and interestingly, it doesn't really specify who his Hakol, and never tells us that Nashim can or can't. It doesn't tell us about Mumar. It is very scant, scarce with like who it mentions, which is interesting. Tosfos will say it doesn't need to because there's not even a svara to think that woman shouldn't shech. So there's no good svara, and the evidence actually points in the direction that of course they should be able to. But there is a view that nashim cannot. That's Eldad Hadani, the Hilchos Eretz Yisrael, and also the Sefer Agur, who are different obviously, but they both say that woman shouldn't shech. So why not? Okay, so we're going to divide this really into three groups. Some explain the svara as to why women can't more than the evidence. And this is like the technical ones, the technical explanations why Nashim can't sheft. Like Tosvos, Nashim Daitan Kalos, and Hagos Maimonios is Girsav, Nashim Daitan Kalos, Beshemem is Alfos. Nashim Daitan Kalos is like maybe a level of like queasiness, that we don't want them to undertake it because they, in their queasiness, they can come make a mistake. Or Miss Alfos isn't necessarily their queasiness, psychological queasiness, but maybe more their weakness or built that they won't be able to perform shchita, at least on a low plug level, they won't be able to perform shchita on the way it needs to be done. So they explain the what?
Why can't they?
Because they just make mistakes. They're very likely to make shamiya kalkulu.
You mean they just don't know the halachas well enough?
No, they physically they won't be able to. They'll either faint or just they're not like they don't have the ability like the adeptness. To execute properly, weaker or you know, it could be again. It could just be they'll faint. Like
that was a queasy. That I'm saying
it could be queasy or physically. They don't have the build. They're like the
not strong enough.
It's not really strong. It's just like the physical. You know, whatever. Okay, so they explain the svara much more, but they really don't. They really don't explain at all. I really do want to finish so everyone could go to Glag Mincha. They really don't explain at all the kachim part. They really don't explain the kachim at all. They don't explain why in kachim nashim shechek lechachila. Shemem is aleph, and also nashim daitan kalos is just as problematic, lechora, in kachim as is in chulin. So why wouldn't the Gemara mention that there? But they do explain, they do give a svara. And Tosos who do just say daitan kalos, I think are open to another pshat, which I'm personally in favor of. No, I don't think in favor. I think it would be interesting. There's this like Shulei HaGilyo, and he's called like the Menachem something. I forget what he's called. He's like a commentary on the Rambam. And he has this like line, which I think is fascinating. Daitan Kalos was used throughout Shas, and in the Rishonim to describe how Nashim are exempt from certain things. So I mentioned Eidus at the beginning. It's possible that Eidus requires a person to be objective, subjectively objective, but objective in presenting the case to the court. The details as they see it. Yediya, Re'iya, of course, go into that. And when the Sefer HaChinuch says that Nashim are psulos because of Nashim, Daitan, Kalos, they're psukim, Anashim, Velo Nashim, there are all these reasons. The Sefer HaChinuch says, Nashim, Daitan, Kalos, it's possible, as Rav Rosenberg spoke about last year a little bit, that Daitan, Kalos means a kind of willing to make assumptions. Daitan, Kalos, Kala, not like, not dumb Chas V'Shalom, that just doesn't hold up. A lot of many, very, very smart women. Daitan Kalos means willing to make assumptions and being associated with a much more bina, not being intellectually nitpicky, which is valuable in some contexts. But when it comes to Eidus, maybe where evidence is key and being objective is key, not willing to skip steps and present what seems to be true, that can be a disqualifying factor, again, on a low plug level for Nashim. So Daitan Kalos, if that's what it means, may actually come out in Chulin something very interestingly. Why? What impact could that have on Chulin? So this guy, the Shulei HaGilyon, says that maybe Nashim are psulos. Again, this is just if you just say Daitan Kalos and you don't give a Shema Misalef. Maybe Nashim are psulos because since it's not ragil for them to learn Torah Sheba Al Peh, they won't become familiar with the halachos. And if in Chulin it's really true, as we said, that there's this Mesorah element, and the Torah Sheba Al Peh element is really plays an outsized role when it comes to Shechitas Chulin, maybe Shechitas Kachim, probably Shechitas Kachim too. So it would explain the Nashim and Daitan Kalos in a very interesting way, that they're not Oseik so much in Torah Sheba Al Peh, about Pratim and about, you know, getting into nitty gritty. Again, it's really just a suggestion. And maybe that could explain, because they won't know the Halachos and they won't be as careful about Hagrama, the five Psulim, you know, like we saw in the Gripap. He won't be able to care about all the details, so then Nashim Daitan Kalos, it's just more like presumptive, like assumption-based thoughts that won't be good, like, oh, I'll just shech the animal and do it in a nice, ethical way, and that should be fine. So maybe because of that, and because of the Torah Sheba Al Peh plays a bigger role, maybe Nashim, and as this on the commentary on the Rambam says, maybe on Dalet, on the Rambam, maybe that's why Nashim shouldn't be good. Fine. So they explain really the Svara, but not so much why in Kachim it shouldn't be good. And even what I said, in Kachim it also shouldn't work, because Shechita in Kachim is just as Torah Sheba Al Peh rooted, Kasher Tzivisicha, as the Shechita Schulin. So others help a bit more, explaining also the evidence, because they don't really find a fundamental issue with Shechita. Fundamentally, Nashim could be Shochdos, but there's a problem in Chulin that exists, that's just a Chulin problem. And that's the Ramah. The Ramah quotes the Sefer Agar, who says that the Minhag has been that women are not Shochdos, and therefore, you know, lo yishchetu, they shouldn't shecht. And the Beis Yosef, quoting that Sefer Agar, it like throws his hand like, what do you mean? Nashim Shochdos, if you told me that they was rampant and everybody was shechting and all over the place, you know, they could have done it. Velo michu, so good, then you can bring a miraya that Nashim shouldn't shecht. That's minhag halacha. But just because they're not doing it, because we have no chazaka that they do it, lo ra'inu in a raya, just because we don't see it, doesn't make it a raya that they can't do it in the future. And so the Shach, and that's the question that Sefer Agar, but the Shach explains, based on the Ma'arik, that when it comes to Minhag, lo ra'inu, kein raya. When it comes to a Minhag that Klai Yisrael has developed, that the Minhag is, for some reason, it came to our hands, that the Minhag is Nashim don't shecht, so then we do say, somehow it's a raya. But again, it's a little bit of a pella, because if it's really true that lo michu, only if we have it, we... only if we have a case where they did it, if it's really true that there was never a case that we protested, Why should it really be true that if, because Klal Yisrael somehow had the minhag, not the shecht, that we would say lo ra'inu raya? So yeah, I was just thinking, I think it has a lot to do with a lot of things about like how you think, I'm not going to go into this, how you think hashgacha works, and the fact that something lemaisa did happen a certain way, and that they somehow the Gedol Yisrael assume it to be our minhag, how much like does hashgacha play a role in that, and can we assume that hashgacha had it out to be that nashim shouldn't be shochtos? How much of minhag really works that way? But fine, but that's how the shach explains it, and then the Prima Gadim kind of like explains that, just like fine tunes it, that lo ra'inu raya won't work when you have you actually have eidos that contradicts each other to be machria. Okay, fine. Okay, good. So maybe the point is it just became a minhag in chulin and not in kachin, or maybe also in kachin. So like I said, it mostly may explain the kachin part, but it doesn't. The evidence from kachin, it definitely gives us a good svara why they wouldn't be shochet. But it also a little bit explains how you go with the Mishnah and Tzvachim, Lam and Avavis. Then there are shitas that really explain both very well. Rav Rosenzweig quoted the Rav as saying that the problem with Nashim Shochtos is it didn't in Srara. That the Gemara in Chulin in Chesam Al says, Sar Sakina, someone who doesn't show the Sakin, who doesn't get credentials, authorization from a Chtam Chacham, can't Shech. So maybe what happened was, is this, the act of being a shochet became a formal appointee in the community, something which, with the Rambam's expansion of Srara, would exclude Nashim from being appointed to this position of Srara, of being a shochet, a formal appointee in the community. Because Kol Misimo Shebi Yisrael, Melech Velo Malka, not just in when it comes to Malchus, but also in all formal appointees in the community, that won't work. A woman is excluded from that, and Rav Moshe has a tshuva about being a mashgiach. Avram pointed out to me that in the actual Shiurei Harav, the way they have him quoted, and for good reason, is it's not srara that excludes nashim, but it's a minoy shel chashivas. Any minoy shel chashivas is a woman excluded from, and he does this to explain the Tor, who thinks that a ger can be appointed as a shochet, avadim mishuchrarim, and we also know from the Gemara in Sanhedrin, that a ger also, there's a problem of srara as well. So he explains that when it comes to srara, al chaver yisrael, that's when a ger can't become, can't have the srara. But here, like in Chulin, where it's not srara al chaver yisrael, like to be a dayan, or to be a melech, but it's just a formal appointee, a chashivas, a minoy shel chashivas, a minoy hakahal, so then a ger could be appointed, but a woman still can't even have a minoy shel chashivas, a minoy hakahal. Rav Rosenzweig suggested a different option, it's option number two, and that obviously explains why it just may be an issue when it comes to Chulin, but in Kachim, where it's not a formal appointee, they would be able to shecht. Rav Rosenzweig said that maybe you have to have a built-in objective nemanus, that you can trust their kashrus, so that even if they wouldn't say anything, even if you didn't have them in your presence, but you just were given their meat package, you'd be able to trust it, and there are some chachmei svarad and ksubas that even by erech and emvisurin we wouldn't trust an isha, even when the edus threshold is lowered. Still, isha doesn't fit the bar. And there are a lot of reasons to explain one way or another. And he explained, and therefore, because maybe to be a shochet, you need to have built-in nemanus. We're getting very close. Built-in nemanus. Sorry, I apologize. Anyone obviously can feel free to leave when mincha happens. Because you have a built-in objective nemanus, is my first chazar shir, so I'm experimenting a lot. Because you need a built-in objective nemanus, you can't even be a shochet. Based on that, those chachmei sfarad and ksubas. That's option number two. And therefore, she can't be a shochet. That could explain the sefer agur. And with both of these, the Rav Rosenzweig wanted to explain the prichadash, wanted to explain the kolbo and orchos chayim, that maybe an isha can shecht for herself, but not for the keeper herself, maybe her family, but not for the community. Because if it's a strara issue, so she isn't a formal appointee if she's just doing it willy-nilly, you know, for her family or to prepare dinner for her family members. But for the community, that's a problem. And the other option as well, also, she has this built-in objective nemanus. That's only an issue when it comes to being a formal shochet. But there is such thing as an informal shchita for herself, and for that, she doesn't need to have this built-in nemanus. I mean, that's what the Prichadash kind of said a little bit, that there's like, you know, impersonal versus public, there are lower standards for nemanus when it's just for yourself. You can trust yourself if you're kosher. But there's just maybe a higher threshold when it comes to permitting things on a public basis, which clearly has a lot to do with how Psak works in general. Okay, those were two options. The Rav, both how Rodek said it and how Avram pointed out to me from the Shuri HaRav, that is by Rabbi Yaakov Konigsberg. And also, Rev Rosenzweig suggested this built-in objective that I'm honest thing. Then he suggested a third option, which he said multiple times in the Shir at different points, that Chulin ironically may contain the Avodah dimension of Kachim in Itzchita and Shchitas Chulin more so than Kachim in Itzchita. The Rambam, as we said, only counts the mitzvah of Shchitas Chulin, and the only other mitzvah Shchita he counts is Korban Pesach, which has no Hakrava, and is maybe most like, for many reasons and a lot of evidence, most like a Shchitas Chulin. Which gives Shchitas Chulin maybe a more of an avodah, not actually an avodah, but more of an avodah feel. The Svara, Natan and I kind of said this in our Chavrusa. I don't think our Rosenzweig may have said it, but kind of what's happening to make Chulin Kachim, so we're exporting the Shchita of Kachim to Chulin, to make your Chulin like Kachim for all the reasons we said. That's not this year though. That was covered by Avram and Avrami. But because there's only a Shchita, so now the Shchita kind of needs to contain, in a way, all Dalet Avodos. In when it came to Kachim, so it was just the Hatchala, the beginning of the process. But it's going to have Kabbalah, it's going to have Halacha, and it's going to have Zrika and Haktara. But by Chulim, where all you have at the end of the day, because it's, you're going to eat it, all you have is the Shchita. So maybe the Shchita plays an even greater, a greater role when it comes to Shchitas Chulim. And the Raivin in the Sifra also kind of spoke about this a little bit. When he was extending the Machshava Shelo Lishma, only stated as a problem by Zrika, of course by Zrika where there's Ritzui, extending the problem of Machshava Shelo Lishma also to Shchita, because Shchita is Materes Bechulin. Mashein Kein, you know, Zrika and, you know, Holacha and Kabbalah. And the Rav Rosenzweig connected this to the Mordechai, who doesn't quote, you know, Daitan Kalos or Shema Misalfos when quoting the Hilchas Eretz Yisroel, I mean the first Simon on Chulin. And he uses the lashon of lo ye'achel pigalhu. And Rav Rosenzweig pointed out, and the footnote of the Cheshek Shlomo, quoting the Agur, says he thinks all these lo ye'achel pigalhu, not making a bracha, being in the right makom, nashim, those are all by kachim. Kachim, of course, by kachim, lo ye'achel pigalhu. That's a connotation of kachim. And the Agur limited it to kachim. But at the end, but in truth, if you look actually, and there's a reason he does that. But if you look at the actual Mordechai, it sounds like he's actually just talking about Chulin. So maybe for all these reasons we said, Chulin, Shchitas Chulin has this more this avoda dimension than it does in Kachim, where it's not intrinsically an avoda, but just part of the Dalet Avodos. Okay, so that's the Nashim Chodesh. So in Chulin we say that Nashim, right, and that explains why Shchitas Chulin wouldn't allow for Nashim, but maybe Shchitas Kachim does, in Svara and for the Gemara. So in Chulin we say that Nashim are not allowed, and a Zar is, in Shchita. That's a transition to the end of Tosfos, that maybe a Nashim is also different from Zar in Shchitas Kachim. Nashim is different than Zar in Shchitas Chulin. Maybe Nashim is also different from Zar in Shchitas Kachim, since even if she's a Kohenes, they are even when she's a Kohenes, they're posel, in like Zrika and in Haktara. So maybe that's, you know, I don't know a better word for this. I hope it's okay. We're like it's more like damning, like it's irrevocable. It ruins her status in those avodos. So maybe also in Shchitas Kachim, also in Isha, the status of Isha is posel. Even if as she's a Kohenes, she can't be do the avodos. Then for sure, even as an Isha in Shchitas Kachim, it should be a problem, which on the one hand assumes a partial avoda to Shchitas Kachim, the fact that Nashim Kohanos wouldn't work, it would be possible, and it also assumes that Zar it's a Shchita is a kind of avoda which Zar is more nitan to than Isha. Correct? Everyone follows that? Good? Okay. So the question is why? Why would it be this Havamina that when it comes to Shchitas Kachim, at least, so Nashim would be different than Zar? It kind of assumes on some level that there is a Yichus to Nashim Kohanos, and that is like an unforgiving psul. It's even worse than Zar or different than Zar. So Rav Rosenzweig, it's not, I'm not going to really go into it, but Rav Rosenzweig pointed out Hafaras Nadarim, where Tosos thinks the Yitzia Mirshus Ha'av that takes her out of the Hafaras Nadarim of the Baal is also a reason, the Yitzia Mirshus Ha'av is also a reason that if her father's a Kohen and she's a Bas Kohen, that if she marries a Yisroel, she can no longer eat Truma. It's a din in Rishus in being Nichnas Tachas base, by, she's in a base Kehuna. But the Gris said it has nothing to do, it's not like Hafaras Nadarim, it has nothing to do with Yitzia Mirshus Ha'av. But it's a din that when she is a Bas Kohen, she has a din of Kahuna, and when she marries a Yisroel, because she's married to him, her destiny is being altered, whatever you want to say, she's no longer has a din Kahuna. But she was eating because of a din Kahuna, not because she just is in the Rishus of someone who can eat Truma and can feed Truma. And so maybe there is this Yichus of Bas of Kohanas. And so just like Rav Eliezer just brought up a few Nafkaminas, and this is really going to end, it's such a shame. It's really only take a couple more minutes. But, okay, happens. Everyone's, no. Everyone's makes mistakes, especially me. Why is there this yichus of Kohano? So in Zvachim and Avdal Amar Aleph, the Gemara, in contrasting Shchita and Zrika, I think. What is it? Yeah, in contrasting... In contrasting Kabbalah and Shchita, says Malik Kabbalah shekein psula bizar v'isha. Why does it say bizar v'isha? It could have just said zar. If isha is really just another psul zar, anyone who can't do avoda is just a zar. So why mention two separately? And Rav Eliezer pointed out, and I'm not sure what you say we could say with this, but that in the Shita Gebetz it takes out the word isha, maybe implying that isha is just nichnas betoch zar, and maybe the pashas of Gemara is that Isha is different than Zara. The Asvin Doraisa and Klal Yates actually notes that by in that same Gemara, that by the Misa of Zrika, the Gemara just says, Malah Zrika Shekein Pesula Bizar, and it's Chayav Misa Bizar, and doesn't mention Isha. So the Asvin Doraisa, Yosef Engel, thinks that he means that Isha is Posel, but it's left out there when it talks about Misa that you get from Zrika, because she isn't Chayav as Misa when she does Zrika like a Zara. Maybe giving some Yichus to Kohenes. If she's a Kohenes, obviously. Okay, so that's another one. That's another nafkamina. Again, so you have Tosek Subas and Zvachim, where either way you look at it, maybe Isha is Zar, or maybe she's a separate psul from Zar. The Rambam in Hilchos Bias HaMikdash, when he formulates it, kind of in one fell swoop and single category, includes in Zar anyone not Mizera Aaron and not Mizera Aaron HaZacharim. His lashon is Ezehu Zar, Kol She'eno Mizera Aaron HaZacharim, She'ne'amar V'archu B'nei Aaron. So B'nai Aaron, you have to be of the Kohanic lineage. V'hiktiru B'nai Aaron, B'nai Aaron, B'nai Aaron, V'lo B'nos Aaron, and not a female B'nos Aaron, including, it seems like, both in one category. And at the end, in Halacha Tesvav, where he delineates 18 psulim, each one of them, he just has Hazar and never specifies Isha or Nashim. So maybe the Rambam thinks it's all just one psul of Zar. That's what it is. Once we know that, yes, she's a Kohen, sure, but we know that she can't do avoda, so it's all the same. Anyone who can't do avoda is just a zar. But the Minchas Chinuch in Shin Tzadi, and it's Meduyuk in the Sefer HaChinuch, argues that Beno Zar is actually a separate soul from Zar. So again, you just have these three, the Minchas Chinuch, the Pashas of Zvachim, and Yosef Engel think Zar and Isha is two distinct psulim. And the Rambam, maybe the Shittim Kubetzas in Zvachim, thinks it's one psul. And you have an Afkamina. Is it just a psul, or is she Chayev Es Misa? V'hazar HaKarev Yumas. If she's a Zar, so then she'll be Chayev Es Misa. But if she's not a Zar, maybe it's Pusel, but not Chayev Es Misa. And then another argument was just that Shittim Kubetzas and Krisus contrasted with the Gemara Baba Basra on Kuf Chaf Amad Beis, where basically the Shittim Kubetzas and Krisus Mesupak, if she does Hamayla Evarim Bachutz, if a woman takes Evarim Bachutz, tries to do, like, let's say, Haktara or Ha'ala, whatever, Bachutz, so he's Mesupak whether she'll violate the prohibition. Because on some level, maybe you have to have a connection. You have to have been, able to do the avoda for chutz to be an offense to that avoda. So maybe only if she has some shaychas to avoda will she also violate hamay levarim b'chutz. Like shidas chutz, it's measured in the potential to be royal pesach ol moed or ru'uyin lahakriv bifnim. So the Shittim Kubetzas in the Shein Rashba says that zar, there's no shaychas bifnim. He can't bring evarim bifnim either. So if he does a bachut, that's not an offense. It doesn't register at all. So he's sure by Zar that there's no problem, but he's mesupak when it comes to Isha, which may reflect that Isha as a Kohenes may have more shaychus to Avoda, even if she's also Pasul, but more shaychus to Avoda than Zar. Okay, that's what he said. I don't think it's so clear, but that is definitely what Rosenzweig said. So just to put all this together, the Rav kind of thought that there's a two-step or two-stage process, and with this we'll end, especially for the Gemara, based on the Gemara in Kiddushin. Thank you, whoever's Gemara this is in advance. Elkanah Shapira, whose Gemaras I often use, so I appreciate it. Thank you for the Gemara in advance. So the Gemara in Kiddushin, when it comes to exclude Nashim, says the following. How do you know Nashim are psulos? Smichos tichsiv. Daber el b'nei Yisroel. V'heinif b'nei Yisroel minifin. B'nei Yisroel minifin v'ein b'nos Yisroel minipos. Sorry, I just skipped. V'samach b'nei Yisroel somchin v'ein b'nos Yisroel somchos. That's smicha. Tenufos daber el b'nei Yisroel v'heinif b'nei Yisroel minifin v'bonos Yisroel. One more. Hagashos zos toras amincha akoriv osa b'nei Aaron b'nei Aaron v'bonos. It goes through each avoda and needs to knock off, cancel out Nashim in each and every single one. But if all it is Zar, on some level the Gemara could have just told us, and Isha is just a Zar, B'nei Yisroel v'lo B'nos Yisroel, that you, it's a din in being a Zar. We know a Zar is possible in anything that's an Avoda. So just say it one time and we know who are din, all the other ones. Bring a Raya by Zrika or Tanufa or Hanafa, and we know the rest. Why in each and every one does the Torah be, say, oh, maybe Isha's kosher? And then we have to exclude them. It sounds like the fact that the Gemara said make a drasha each time, that in each single avoda, maybe Isha would have been kshera, kamashalon she's not, and that it's a specific psul in each avoda and not in her gavra as an Isha. Maybe it's different than being a zar. And so the Rav wants to suggest based on that it can't be that we look at Isha legamre as just a zar, that she has no shaychus to kunu at all, unlike the Griz, that she does really maybe have a din of kohenes. But what happens is that the drushos, the many drushos, the many of them, create a two-step process that generates what is, as Rav Rosenzweig said, what is, but what otherwise wouldn't be a status of Zar for Nashim. Nashim do have a din of Kohenes, so they shouldn't be a classic Zar. But after the Gemara is done and excludes in each and every single one, giving Yichas to her Kohenes status by making so many of them, by making so many dressers, after it goes through each and every one, ultimately what comes out is that she does ultimately have a din of Zar Lagabe Avoda, and it gives her a psul Zar, even though it may not have been that, it gives her a psul Zar when it comes to Avoda, even if vis-a-vis other things, maybe like Kahuna, like Truma, she does have a din of Kohenes. She does have a din of Kohenes. So that would explain the Rambam's Zer Aaron HaZacharim. It ends up being a psul which merges, but it still gives a level of yichus to the uniqueness that comes out from Bnei Aaron, Bnos Aaron, and their Kiddusha. Okay, Shkoyach, that's it. Oh, yeah.